Welcome to the Misfit Stars podcast. I'm Shannon Curtis.
And I'm Jamie Hill. Hi, everyone. Hi, Shannon.
Hello from Interstate 5 in Northern California.
So exciting.
We are barreling down the highway. You might hear road noise in the back, and that's why, because we are on Thanksgiving break. Well, we'll be on Thanksgiving break as soon as this podcast is done.
As soon as this car stops moving, it's going to be the end of what has been sort of the longest week in recent memory.
Totally.
Oh my gosh, we're so stinking tired right now.
Yeah, but that should make for a really interesting and fun podcast, though. So
could be loopy, probably short.
I think it could be fun. It probably will be great.
We're just going to talk crap until we run out of steam, I think, on this one. Hey, by the way, while Shannon readjusts her microphone, she's been having microphone issues, people.
I do have issues.
The little gooseneck is just aiming the microphone away from the part of her face that makes sound. It's bad. If you've been thinking that she sounds distant for the last month or two on the podcast, it's not your imagination.
It's not that I feel distant from you.
Yeah. Just keep fucking manipulating that thing, baby. You can do it. You can do it.
All right,
hey, by the way, people.
What?
Welcome to season two.
Today's the episode one of season two.
We had to kind of make a command decision in the car about 10 minutes ago.
Because
I realized the last one was like, you know, season one, episode 52. And, I mean, it's either going to, at this point, be... You know, looking 10 years in the future, season one, episode 748, or this is going to be season two, episode one.
Will podcasting even still be a thing 10 years in the future?
I don't know.
It's been a great year. We've had a great first year of our podcast. Last week's episode, we talked all about, like, all the things that have come into our lives as a result of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And things that we've learned and stuff that's changed us, and it's been really good. It's been really super positive. If you missed last week's episode, you should go back and listen to it.
Yeah, it was nice.
But welcome to season two. All new year, all new content.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Asterisk. That's not true. Partway through an existing year, probably same content.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Fine. That's fine.
But I think it's, you know, it's working so far.
Hey,
so we're just going to go with it.
So welcome to our new listeners and to our new supporters.
Yeah.
Of which we've had some new ones this last week. Thank you.
In fact, someone did something really cool this week that I just want to sort of mention because I think a lot more of you should do it. They were one of our OG supporters. Like, if you go to sign up right now as a podcast supporter, you can sign up, for $5 a month, which is a totally, like, bargain basement, super inexpensive. Like, why don't you do that? In fact, just go do that right now.
If you're
listening and you're not a supporting member, please just become one. Oh my gosh, it would help so much.
Yeah.
But that sidebar aside, we launched our Patreon. That's the mechanism that we use to do our subscription model for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a year before we had actually figured out that a podcast should be the thing that we do with it.
Right.
Right? And so our initial support level at that point was like $3 a month. And we had a bunch of legacy supporters who to this day are just grandfathered in at $3 a month.
Yeah.
One of them, over this last week...
Upped the game.
Oh, yeah. They edited their pledge from $3 a month to $20 a month.
What a complete misfit superstar that person is.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Misfit supernova. Amazing.
First of all,
they're going to get themselves our absolutely amazing, super rare, super beautiful Misfit Stars t-shirt.
I'm wearing yours today.
I'm wearing mine today. They come in black, which I'm obviously wearing.
Or midnight navy, which I prefer.
Midnight navy. I honestly kind of prefer it too, but it's just not the color I wear. You know what I mean? And you got to have principles.
Hey, a goth has got to have principles.
You know, I think a large part of the problem we're experiencing right now in our nation is people not sticking to principles enough. You know?
That's a fair assessment.
Yeah.
So thank you to that misfit star who became a supernova this past week. That is such a rad move.
And
thank you. All the rest
of you $3 people, there's a lot. Here's the deal. If you've been part of this group for longer than a year, then you are, by definition, one of our original grandfathered in $3 a month people.
You're the best.
In the system, in the back end, this is nothing any of you would ever know, but we have a name for all the levels. Your name is Protostars.
You are the Protostars.
By the way. But if you're one of the Protostars, hey, why don't you just consider upping your pledge?
You could.
It's called editing. If you just go in, you log into the Patreon, just, you know, misfitstars.com/join, just sign in.
Mm-hmm. You could become an uncommon constellation.
Yep, you could. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You could become a singular supernova.
You could become a singular supernova.
We did star names for all of them because we're huge freaking dorks.
You should really go take a look at them.
Yeah.
The place that you do this is you go to misfitstars.com/join.
Yep.
That's where you can, if you're already a member, up your game.
Yep.
Like this supernova friend that we have do this last week. Or if you're just, you want to become a member for the first time, you go to misfitstars.com/join.
It would help.
And become a member. This is a member-supported podcast, meaning that it it goes and continues to go on the support of people who listen and find that it brings some value of some sort into their lives, and they want to be part of making it go. So join our group. It'll be awesome to have you. We will, if you are so inclined to join our sticker sheet level, you could do that. The t-shirt level, you could do that.
And you get a sticker sheet if you do the t-shirt.
Right.
You get both.
That's right.
No big deal.
But all the levels get an invitation to our private Facebook group as well.
Yeah.
Which is one of the best perks and a great place for people to continue conversation, to encourage one another. I just love our group.
There's been a bunch of activity in there this week. It's been really nice. Just people just encouraging each other, talking about stuff, posting stuff they're working on.
I love it.
You know what I posted in the group just today? But I'll show this publicly because I think it's so cool.
Okay.
You know that we have a special soft spot in our heart for our people in our community who are also creators, you know?
Yes, of course.
And one of our Misfit stars, Elaine Nolan, she lives in Ireland, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
We have international Misfit stars.
That's right.
No big deal. Kind of a big deal. She's an author. She put in the mail to us at our P.O. box, two of her books.
I'm so excited.
Yes, it's amazing. One of them she had published, one of them she self-published. It's just the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And I have one of them in my bag right now, and I'm going to read it over Thanksgiving break.
Yay.
And how cool is that to have a book that someone wrote that I'm going to read that, like, we know.
It's
and
so
we know
cool.
it because of, like, our community and the internet, and that's just cool.
It's very, very cool.
Yeah, so thank you,
Thank you, Elaine.
Yep.
Members, listeners, supporters, thank you all.
Check.
And
check.
This week,
check.
What did we do this week, Jamie?
Oh my gosh, we did so much. We did one
we
thing.
We did so
but
much
it,
slash so little.
Yeah, we did one thing, but we did it for 14 hours a day for 4.5 days.
So, okay, background. We moved into this house in Tacoma, Washington almost 2 years ago.
Yep.
And
2 years, like a month from today.
When we first walked into this house to see it for the first time when we were house shopping. We walked into this place and it had 20-year-old carpet,
mm-hmm.
pink and mauve walls,
yellow linoleum floor in the kitchen.
Yes, yellow.
Walls painted yellow.
Yellow and brown linoleum, let's say. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it clearly was last renovated in like 1982 by the looks of the age of the appliances that were in there.
We're of a certain age. Like, I was 10. I was 9 years old turning 10 in 1982. And I remember that, like, my friends who had parents who were in a position to buy new appliances, like, there was that wave of those really nice
appliances.
Almond-colored Kenmores, the ones with the wood paneling, like they were a station wagon.
Oh, heck yeah.
But some people who are listening right now who are of a certain age will know exactly what I'm talking
about.
And, yeah, we have those. actually, because I'm getting ahead of myself.
You are. The dishwasher had to buy. But anyway, when we walked into this house, it didn't look at all like a pretty place that would woo a person to want to buy it.
It didn't look like us, for sure.
Right. But nonetheless, when we walked into this place, I was in there for just a few minutes
mm-hmm.
before standing in the living room and thinking to myself, we're going to live in this house.
Yeah.
Like, this is where we're going to be.
Yeah.
And so I've always felt from the moment we saw the place, I felt at home there. It is our home.
Yeah.
But it has needed some cosmetic updating.
Yeah.
So we did a bulk of that when we first moved into the place two years ago. But the kitchen, we didn't really do anything except for paint the walls when we first moved in.
Yep.
And that yellow and brown linoleum just had to go. And so it was like
6-inch by 6, divided into 6-inch by 6-inch squares. Yeah. I mean, visually, it came on a roll.
Of course.
But it was, 6-inch by 6-inch squares. And to be fair, like when you say just like yellow and brown linoleum, it's like, oh God, that sounds horrible. It was the nicest possible version of that you could imagine, right? Like, it was not bad. I didn't like hate being in the kitchen, but it was sure dated and needed fixing. Shannon was much more dissatisfied with it than I was.
I mean, I lived with it for 2 years. Like, it's not like it ruined my life, but I can still say that it was also bad. Anyway, it's now gone because we replaced the kitchen floor over the last 4 days, 5 days.
Yeah, we did this ourselves.
We did. Because we're DIYers at heart. We love to dig in and learn new things.
Yep.
And so fortunately for us, from the time that we first moved into this house and through this project, one of our dearest friends in Tacoma is a contractor. And he does home remodels for a living. And he does beautiful work. And so he's been mentoring us through all of this. And thank you, Brian, for all of the phone calls and text messages
so
over the past week
much.
Guiding us through. But But to have somebody to, you know, to run things by was super helpful. But really, we kind of had to learn how to install a floor this last week. And it was a lot of fun. Like, it was one of those scenarios. Honestly, I feel like our communication, if anyone listening here has ever done home remodeling, you know how stressful it can be.
Yeah.
And how
it's physically hard. Your body hurts all of the time. Your hands are cramping. Your back is seizing. You have to contort yourself into uncomfortable positions and perform really weird feats of micro strength.
Yeah.
Like twisting screws that have been in the wall for 75 years or pulling staples out of the wall or just all kinds of random stuff.
And that's just the physical stuff, which honestly I could do all day long. The stuff that was really tiring and really taxing was all the problem solving.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize,
curves everywhere.
Yeah, and so that, I don't think I realized during the process was how much of a toll it was actually taking.
Yeah.
But I think that, honestly, we've talked last week in the podcast about how this podcast has helped our communication skills with each other. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that we saw a lot of the fruit of that in our home project this last week.
It's like, really true.
We actually did really well under, you know, potentially very stressful circumstances, like being really patient with each other, allowing each other to finish sentences and thoughts and
being supportive, letting each other do stuff and go and take turns and trading ideas back and forth. I was really stoked on us.
Yeah.
I thought we did great.
Good job, you. We gave
you
lots
too.
Of high fives. Yeah. By the way, this is like something I feel like I've learned over the last few years. Like when you're like working with another person or with a team of people, like regular high fives for small victories really feel good and help the process go so much better.
Yeah. Celebrating small victories in general is a really good life skill to acquire, and doing it with high fives just really makes it feel all the more celebratory.
Like, you know, successfully actually getting that nail out of the floor after 5 minutes of pulling with pliers. High five.
I executed a double miter on two different ends of a board with precise positioning of each miter cut at two different angles. I'm incredibly proud of myself.
I was proud of you too. You did a great job.
We've sort of taken like different department head roles. You're kind of more in charge of the painting department.
Oh yeah.
And I'm kind of more in charge of the carpentry department.
Great.
Yeah,
I love it. You've been wanting to get some saws for a while, so now that we have
them. Did we mention we obtained a bunch of saws?
We obtained saws, which is great. And it's also dangerous because now that the floor project is finished, now we're both like, oh man, we've got saws. We can do anything.
We
like,
have a table saw,
yeah.
And we have a double bevel, like a compound miter saw. Like, so the world's our oyster.
Anyone listening right now, you need us to build you a house. We'll do it. We'll show up. We'll build you a house.
We got those two saws, and we also got what we call the devil tool, which is not actually a tool of Satan, but kind of feels like one when you're holding it. What's it called, Shannon?
A multi-tool.
Yeah, a multi-tool. It has these little different clip-on ends. It's just a vibrating, like, oscillating saw, but in this handheld. There's a huge warning, like, at the very front of the manual that says, do not use for prolonged periods, can cause permanent muscular and nerve damage. Like, that's how hard it oscillates. This thing is just, like, really out of control.
Do not look directly at Happy Fun Ball.
Yeah, seriously. It is a Happy Fun Ball of tools, for sure. Extraordinarily dangerous. So, you know, but you have to use it to do things like cutting into door trim, just cutting a half inch off the bottom of door trim so you can slide the flooring under it, because the flooring has to, like, vanish underneath stuff.
Right.
Like, we had to learn all these incredibly, like, difficult skills, and, like, you get one chance to do them, right? Because, like, then you've cut into your frickin' doors trim, and it's done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's it. It's like, we have to spend, like, so much time just agonizing about all this stuff, and then, like, well, here goes nothing.
Yeah.
And then just do it and hope it turns out.
Yeah, it was a series, like, a constant stream of unknowns, uncertain that we had the ability or skills to execute what we needed to do, pushing through the vulnerability of that, encouraging each other along the way, and that's why there were so many high fives.
So many.
Because you just got to celebrate the moments.
Yeah, I was pounding non-alcoholic beers. I was like having two or three non-alcoholic beers a night. Like, fuck, that was stressful. Better pop a non-alcoholic beer.
Oh my gosh. also, I was really thirsty in the process, so there, that was, you know. Yep. Anyway, so we did the floors, and it took a bunch of time. It was so rewarding. Mm-hmm. It feels really great to be doing work, investing our time and effort. And
because we did all the work of ourselves, it was totally cost-effective. Yeah. It was actually kind of cheap.
Yeah.
It turns out, like, when you're artists, you don't always have much money, but you sometimes have time.
That's right.
And so, like, that's what we trade on, you know? Like, that was that was our sort of our Christmas gift to each other this year.
Merry Christmas,
you know?
Honey.
Merry Christmas to you too, baby. Right? It's like we invested 4.5 days in one another.
That's right.
That's nice.
It was really nice.
And it looks beautiful. I'm really proud.
We should be.
We did all the baseboards, you know, just did the whole thing. It looks really, really good.
Yeah. So as not to bother, so as not to bore y'all with any more details about our home remodeling project.
I bet people are stoked.
Maybe they are. That's probably a sufficient summary of that particular activity this week, but that's what we spent our time doing.
Yeah.
We did have one actual significant break.
We went on a date.
We went on a date night in the middle of that, which we had to do because one of our stars, Misfit star Scott, messaged us one day with the news of this one-day-only screening of a Depeche Mode movie.
It was screening worldwide only on Thursday.
Yeah.
One day, worldwide. How rad is that?
So when we found out about that, like on Wednesday, we're like, well, we have to get tickets.
Yeah.
And so we did. And so we paused our work Thursday night to go see this Depeche Mode movie, which, you know, if it had been just me, I like Depeche Mode. Mm-hmm. But we went because of the relationship, the very personal relationship that Jamie has with Depeche Mode and has had for years and years and years. So do you want to describe the movie?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, just at a high level, it's putatively a concert film.
Oh, but so much more.
So much more. And it's actually really cool. Like, you probably wouldn't know this, Shannon, because, like, I doubt you saw this back in, like, 1989 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But they had a concert film back then called Depeche Mode 101. And it was also a concert film. Like, the reason it was called 101 is they did a 101-day world tour for their 1987 record, Music for the Masses.
Oh,
kind of their
uh-huh.
big breakout record, right?
Interesting.
And the last show of the tour was at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena.
Oh.
And it was 101st show of 101 shows.
Oh, fun.
And so, though, the framework for the movie was, first of all, the band leading up to that tour, but then also six lucky fans from around the U.S. who got put together in a bus to road trip reality, like early reality show style, to Pasadena to go see them.
Oh, wow.
Right?
That
and
was
so,
like reality shows before there were reality shows.
It was right around the time of Real World, right?
Oh,
just a little before
I see.
That, maybe?
Yes.
A little
uh-huh.
before, yeah. But for sure, right around that
okay.
same very, like, gestational, like, what if we put people in a real situation and film them?
And then make the
right?
president. What?
Yeah. And, whoa.
Yes,
and then Puck's
sorry.
President. And what? What's going on? President Puck, this is terrible. You're just an asshole.
Well, yeah.
So, totally got off track. So what I was doing is I was setting up, like, this new film. It was directed by Anton Corbijn, first of all, who has been photographing, 80s bands since the 80s. He's the guy who did all the Joshua Tree era photos of U2.
Yeah.
He did all the same era photos of Depeche Mode. He had that real grainy, filmic, black and white, like, right-in-your-face, grainy reality kind of photography. Really beautiful, amazing focus.
Yeah.
He had just had this amazing ability to capture moments in that way, and the actual physical filmic style that he shot in was really distinctive.
Cool.
And so he directed this film and also did a lot of the photography for it, cinematography. So that was really cool. But the framework for this film was people from all over the world. I mean, a couple from different places in South America, one person from Miami, a person from France, you know, person from what, Russia or no, Kiev maybe?
There was someone from
Romania. That's
Romania,
what it was. Eastern Europe somewhere.
Mongolia.
New. Yeah.
Brazil, Colombia, Los Angeles.
Yep.
France.
Good memory.
Thanks.
And so, like, all these different people, like, were converging upon Berlin for the end of Depeche Mode's tour in 17, right? 18. Yeah, right. And so it was a concert film about that last show in Berlin, sort of allegedly, but mostly it was also kind of about how all of these people's lives had been improved greatly by their relationship with Depeche Mode.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just the relationship that they had formed with the band as listeners. Yeah, you know what
like,
I mean?
Like, they started the movie out with a young woman from Mongolia. Like, she's probably in her... Oh, she was like 26, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right, mid-20s.
So it's not like she grew up with Depeche Mode and this is like something that she has loved, you know.
Because you'd have to be 20 years older than her, like I am, for
exactly.
that to be the deal, yeah.
But this band means so much to her and they, you know, sort of peeled back the layers on her story and as to why that was the case. Like, it was all about these, like, the way in which these people's actual lives had been impacted in a really real way by... A band.
Yeah.
By this band.
Like in a long-term yeah. healing your life, making you a better version of yourself kind of way.
So can you identify?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and what they all put their finger on is the same thing that if you had asked me without my having first seen the movie, like if you'd asked me to identify what it was about that band at that time in my life and like in a much more continuing sense over my mm-hmm. adult life had been the thing that had drawn me to them. And it's funny because I would not have been able to articulate this at the time it was having the greatest version of this effect upon me.
Right.
Which was when I was like, you know, 16, 17, 18, when I was just depressed and lonely and yeah. miserable and in a really transitional, very hard, lonely phase of my life.
Yeah.
I felt like a misfit. I felt like an outsider. I mean, I still do a lot of times, but I've just learned to like make that, I've turned that into an advantage in my life.
An asset.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. but it didn't feel like one when I was that age,
sure.
you know? And what they did for me is they made it feel safe for me to entertain ideas of being outside of the norm.
Yeah.
To indulge in myself the parts of me that are different, that are just, you know, outsider, marginal, you know? Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of them. I'm kind of weird, and I think weird thoughts, and I have weird ambitions. I mean, I've turned my life into this weird thing where, like, I don't really have a job and I just help people make art and that's what I do and hopefully, you know, and I try to, and I mentor people and, I, you know, all the weird stuff I do and it's just, and, you know, if you had asked me when I was, you know, 16, 17, you know, is it okay to have a life outside of the mainstream? Like, the pressure to be inside of the mainstream when you're a kid is extreme, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Like, and a lot of that comes from your parents or just, like, the structures that are imposed upon you when you're a kid, right? Because, like, especially, like, in the 70s and 80s, I was going to school in an environment that was still basically trying to churn out factory workers, you know? And the idea of school at that time is, like, you just need to learn to sit down and shut up and learn a certain base set of skills that everyone's going to learn.
Take this test and get a grade and
yeah,
then move on
it.
To a good
and then you,
school.
And then you go to college and you got to go to college, you got to get a job, and you've got to start saving for your future, and you know, just there's all these gotta's.
It's so funny. Like, I remember, I can think back to like high school years and college years, and well, a lot of periods of my life actually where I just accepted that all those norms were what you're supposed to do in life.
Supposed you know? To, a lot of supposed to's.
Lots of supposed to's. Never questioned it, never. Yeah. And when you really like step back and look at how we have set up our society. Like, it's all made up.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It could all... be set up anyway.
Yeah. It's kind of... This is the kind of conversation that I think probably would be really done really well if we were, like, smoking weed right now. Like, I've never smoked a thing in my life, but I feel like this is the kind of conversation people who smoke weed have.
Like what if, like, society was just, like, organized differently, man?
I mean... Yeah, man. I really
like,
do.
Like, who even made those rules?
Exactly. So let's break them all. But I totally hear.
Honestly,
what you're
you know who made those rules is factory owners.
Yeah, it's corporations.
Yeah, yeah. It's capitalism run amok.
Totally.
Yeah, all the bad things, like you, per usual, are just because of you know, because of that. But that's a digression.
It is a digression, yes. Yeah. But I was really struck by that notion watching this film too. You know, I remember when we were. Driving home from the movie, I remember telling you that, like, you know, when I was a kid, I remember I knew who Depeche Mode were,
mm-hmm.
I knew their music and I liked it. It wasn't like I never owned any of their records as a kid, because and none of the people that I hung out with were listening to that kind of music, so it's not like. Actually, when I would go to my friend Tanya's house, her older sister would definitely be listening to Depeche Mode and The Cure. And, you know, like, that's probably where I heard most of it, honestly.
Cooler older sisters. Man.
Yeah.
My friend Alexi's older sister, Andrea, who's kind of like my big sister, too, she was the older Cure listening.
Yes.
She was playing Kiss Me, Kiss Me, Kiss Me in, like, 1988, and we were like, what's this sorcery?
What's this? Yeah.
Just so, Like Heaven, what's that?
Yeah. So,
the
know,
best song ever, turns out.
Yeah, it turns out. Yeah. So, you know, I remember hearing the music and thinking, oh, I like this. And, like, I wasn't listening to lyrics, and there wasn't really a place in my life for me to enter into any more of a fandom than just the occasional hearing it on the radio or hearing it through Tanya's bigger sister's bedroom door, you know? So, like, I didn't have an opportunity to connect. And my world was not, you know, I grew up in a sort of, I guess I would call it a religious subculture that didn't really encourage listening to music that was on the radio.
you know? Goddamn Footloose over there.
I know. Borderline. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, not that I was completely, you know, ignorant of what was happening on the radio.
I mean, you had, like, Amy Grant. She was crossover.
She only became crossover later, and even that was a scandal. So, you know.
Really?
Oh, for sure. Are you kidding me? There were people... There were, like, OG Amy Grant fans who were, like, very disappointed in her when she, like, made a crossover to mainstream music.
Like Baby Baby was, like, blasphemy or something?
Oh, totally.
Oh,
my gosh. Major controversy. So, but that was the world that I sort of lived in. I knew that the Depeche Mode was out there, and I liked it.
Just sonically?
Just from the music. But I can really see how... It could be a refuge that, you know, at that age, you know, to find a band whose music was just really encouraging in the idea. And they said this in the movie that you know, attracted people who had just decided who they were going to be, and they were just going to be that.
Yeah.
Whether or not, you know, that was what was normal.
Yeah.
But, you know, the
accepted,
conventional.
Yeah, right.
You know, but just, you know, to find a refuge with a group of people in fandom of a band that encouraged people to just be who they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's such a great, I don't know, I want to be like that too.
You know,
I
want to
be
really,
that kind of person.
You know what's really, yeah, first of all, yes. And you know what's really interesting that I'm just kind of thinking about right now, too? I wonder if part of the reason that I personally resonated so much with them lyrically was that Dave, the singer of the band, he's a drug addict and alcoholic, famously so, and famously sober now.
Right.
Like, he's a fixture on the L.A. scene there, the sobriety scene.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, and it's really, really cool. And, like, he talks about it, and I believe, in interviews and stuff, and... It's really neat, and it's really cool. I get the sense that there's a real service mentality there with him. Mm-hmm. And what was, you know, but what for me lyrically, I think I really latched onto, thinking back on it now, especially around that, like, Music for the Masses, like 1987, like Violator, you know, which is 1990. Those two records were, like, the really big ones for me, just because I was exactly the right age when they came out.
Yeah.
And so Martin is the songwriter, and he's not an alcoholic, but he was writing songs for Dave to sing.
Yeah.
And the songs on those two records, I mean, some of them are just about, like, weird relationship stuff, like loneliness and mm-hmm. and perversions and stuff like that, and, you know, pet perversions, even that kind of thing. But mm-hmm. some of them were, like, about, like, first person accounts of harrowing addiction stuff and the ways that makes you feel.
Right.
You know, it's just super interesting. Like, the song behind...
What was the one that you pointed out to me during...
Behind the Wheel.
Behind the Wheel. And
yeah.
How does it go? What are some of the lyrics?
I'm taking a drive with my best friend. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's Never Let Me Down.
Okay.
It's Never Let Me Down Again. So it's I'm taking a drive with my best friend. I hope he never lets me down again. He knows where he's taking me where I want to be. I'm taking a drive with my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
We're flying high. We're watching the world pass us by. Never want to come down. Never want to put my feet back down on the ground. Mm-hmm. And that sense of escapism and looking for something outside of yourself to take you away from this place that you are not happy with being. was super, super relatable to me.
Yeah.
And it's funny, right? Because I just felt that like, wow, they understand me so well, but I didn't realize they understood me so well because one of them was like a really bad alcoholic, which right. is what I was going to be.
Well, it's so interesting. right. But it's so interesting that Martin, a non-addict, mm-hmm. wrote those words for his friend and bandmate, Dave, who was in the middle of his addiction
yeah.
at that time. To sing. Like, he wrote the words that were going to come out. That's an interesting dynamic, like, in mm-hmm. terms of, like, a friendship. Like, he clearly yeah. had a deep understanding of what motivated his friend, Dave. Oh,
what a tremendous act of empathy in yeah, a certain way, you
totally.
Know?
Totally. That's wild. That's yeah. really wild.
Yeah, and there's a lot more examples like that looking back on their catalog. And it's just, it's really interesting, you know? Like, I related at such a basic cellular level, like an instinctive, like brainstem level to some of that stuff. Like,
right.
like I just felt like they were speaking my truth. And I think really retrospectively in a deeper way than I knew at the time, they really were.
Yeah.
You yeah. know, but so much of the rest of it too, just like the, just leading by example, like the fact that Martin as a songwriter was so willing to so nakedly and vulnerably explore his own personal frailty and his own like, his own weird shit, you know?
Hmm.
Like, so a lot of their songs are just about, like, his, like kink. You know
oh,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just, like, weird, sexy stuff that, like, most people would be mortified to talk about.
Right.
You know? And he not only was willing to talk about it, but also managed to talk about it in a way that made it sound not off-putting, but sort of like something to be sympathetic with.
Uh-huh.
And almost, like, that made him sound... and made them sound more human for it.
Right, right.
You know, like making it not sound like gross, but just like, you know what, here's just me being human and I understand that I'm not perfect and I understand that this is weird, but I just want to be open about it because that's how we forge a common human experience.
No kidding.
And that was a subtext, I think, for so much of their work, you know, through the 80s and then, you know, I mean, to this day, really, you know.
Yeah.
Incredibly powerful, you know, just this idea that like you don't have to be ashamed of who you are because you know what? Every single one of us thinks about weird shit all of the time. And well, then it has to like really consciously be like, I can't talk to people. I can't talk about this.
Right.
But every single person listening to my voice right now thinks about weird shit all day long that they would never ever admit to or share with their closest friend or confidant. You know what I mean?
We all have weird, but we all yeah. have feel a lot of pressure to normalize ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah. and that normalization sometimes comes at the cost of connection.
Which is fucked up because because being weird is what's normal.
yeah,
you
totally.
Know, it's just like we think that the facade is what's supposed to be normal, but that's not normal. That's a really strange coping mechanism to hold off against vulnerability when really, like, why should it be vulnerable to share just the basic elemental fact that we're just all awkward mammals?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Trying to figure this out as we go.
Yeah.
Because there's no manual.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. Yeah, it was a moving experience to see the movie, and
maybe that's why they call them movies.
Whoa! I don't think that's why they call them that.
No,
but
it's not.
Yeah. but go
a
ahead.
A person who's just learning English. Hey, is that why they call the movies? No, it's not.
No, not at all.
Depeche Mode really were like the original Misfit stars, weren't they?
They totally were. Yeah. To make it all about us.
right?
Yeah.
But enough about me. What do you think about me?
Oh, my God. we are currently rolling through downtown Sacramento.
Sup, Sac?
Which is a place I spent a bunch of time in my formative years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a place that I have this... just two sides of one coin feeling about this town.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, I have a lot of memories from my time living here that were some of the hardest, darkest parts of my life.
You hit kind of a bottom in your life here, didn't you?
I did. I hit a bottom in my life here. But I also here discovered a new way to be and a new path. And so there's also, you know, all the memories of sort of like the beginning of a reinvention of my life after that bottom. And so going through here it's always sentimental for me, you know.
Well, and for me too, oddly, yeah. I never lived here, but this is where you were living when we first started dating.
And incidentally, if you look out the right side of the car right now, there's the Tower Theater.
Yes.
Which is adjacent to the Tower Cafe, which is literally where we shared a meal together on a date for the first time ever.
Yes. It's really true. Yeah. So romantic. Oh my gosh.
So fun.
I was so obsessed. I was just like, who is this?
I was also like, about myself, who is this? Because I was just, that was my reinvention time. I didn't, I was starting my life 2.0 for sure during that time.
Yeah.
What a great time.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So we're about to do our Thanksgiving holiday. My mom lives in Folsom, California, which is where we'll be ending up in just about 20 minutes.
Yes, it's where the prison is.
We're not going to the prison. My mom's not in prison.
Imagine we were just like having inmate dinner with your felonious mom.
Oh, gosh.
Your mom is like least likely person in the world to commit a felony.
Yes.
Yeah.
She is for sure.
Yep.
But So we're going to wrap up the podcast for today because Thanksgiving is barreling toward us, or we're barreling toward it, or something like that.
Thanksgiving looms.
That's right. I hope that you all have a really great holiday this week, if you are celebrating that, if you're in the United States and celebrating Thanksgiving week.
But you know what? No matter where you live, I think we can all agree that we can celebrate colonialism and imperialism, really, no matter where we are.
No, actually the opposite of that.
Oh, right.
Right.
Sorry, my bad.
I'm going to choose to just focus on the opportunity to express gratitude for the good things and people in my life.
And I'm just going to choose at Thanksgiving dinner to open with a recognition that we're on native lands. Because I think that's going to go over really well.
I think you should do that. Yeah, that's a good call.
Yep, totally.
We'll give you an update about how that goes on next week's episode.
Oh, my goodness.
You all, thank you so much for giving us your time this week, your ears. Thank you for being with us, those of you who have been for the last year, and those of you who are joining us for the first time in Season 2, Episode 1 today.
Yeah, new Appreciate beginnings.
It. Yeah.
Season 2, Misfit Stars, A New Hope. And by the way, I also want to say, on a more serious note, as we hurdle here into the holiday season, I know that for my sober friends, or for my friends who aren't sober but maybe should be, or maybe wish they were, or are struggling with stuff around that, this can be a really difficult time of year. It can be very triggering. So if anyone's having difficulty with stuff like that, please just feel free to reach out to me. You can message me on Facebook. That's a good way to do that. That's it. If you need some support, just let me know. I'm here for that.
Right on.
Yeah.
I might email you.
Okay. No, don't. Message me on Facebook.
Message you on Facebook. Sorry. Yeah. Okay.
You send me an email, I'm deleting that. No, I won't. I'm just kidding. I would never do that. I would honor emails. Anyone out there has my email address, please feel free to email me. I'm an open book.
You all, thank you so very much. Have yourselves a great weekend. We will see you again next week.
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving. Love y'all.
Take good care of yourselves. Bye.
Bye.